This year, the North House Folk School Northern Landscapes Festival is turning its attention toward some of the basic elements of the North Shore, the rocks and the fire and the rhythms of the seasons. Tomorrow night, Saturday night, a Minnesota author and retired UMD geology professor, Dr. Richard Ojikangas, will give a presentation at the Folk School about the geology of the North Shore. Ojikangas, author of books called Minnesota Geology and Roadside Geology of Minnesota, will talk about the geology of our area going back maybe a billion years, let's say. The presentation he is doing will begin at 7:30 p.m. tomorrow, but he is joining us by phone now from his home in Duluth. Dr. Ojikangas, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be there.
All right. Now, why don't you just tell us, you've been a geologist for a long time. How did you become interested in geology, and do you have a special area of interest or expertise?
Oh, yeah. Well, I became interested. I was a business major at UMD back in the early 50s, started in 50, in fact, and I was a business major for 3 years. You had to take some science, you know, for your general distribution requirements, and geology 1 and 2 and trigonometry was a package that happened to fit into my schedule, so I said, I'll try that. And I just got turned on, and I ended up switching majors, going on to graduate school in geology and so on. Now, that was back in about 53, so that's what, 47 and 14?
Yeah, you do the math.
Long time ago.
All right, and did you enter into any kind of special area of interest, or is geology geology?
Well, geology is geology, but there's all kinds of specialties, of course. Mm-hmm. And I had thought when I went to graduate school at the University of Missouri for my master's that I would be an economic geologist, you know, ore deposits. Mm-hmm. But 3 weeks after I got there, I was into a course on sedimentation, and that just turned me on, and I became a sedimentologist, specializing in the study of sandstones and the types of ore deposits that are in them. So it is combining a little bit of economic geology, because most of the iron formations, the uranium, and a lot of the gold is in sedimentary rocks.
Mm-hmm. Sedimentary rock meaning what?
Sandstones, you know, that were sand, that now are sandstone cemented rocks, mudstones, which are now shales, and limestones, which were loose calcium carbonate fossiliferous deposits, usually on the ocean floor.
And those are deposits from water bodies.
All deposits of water, yeah. The limestones are mostly in the ocean. Muds and shales can be anywhere. Sands and rivers, lakes, oceans.
I read on the internet, so it must be true, that the Earth is about 4.54 billion years old.
Right.
Talk about a little bit about that timeline and what we find now that goes back that far. What's the oldest rock that you can find in the northeastern Minnesota area?
The oldest one in Minnesota is 3.5, and that's not northeastern Minnesota. That's in the Minnesota River Valley, you know, 100 miles south of the city.
Really?
Oh. Or not quite 100, I guess. There we have rocks 3.5 billion. At Morton and Montevideo, Minnesota, two places, and another third one there, too, as well.
And are those sedimentary rocks?
No, those are gneisses, metamorphic rocks that maybe they were sediments once, but they're so recrystallized that we can't tell what the original rock was. Was it a plutonic rock, volcanic rock, sedimentary rock? We don't know. All we've got is the chemistry on those because they're all recrystallized, but the chemistry says it could be any one of those.
Hmm. How do you determine age like that? Is that through the chemistry?
Yeah, you're looking at the chemistry of radioactive elements measured in laboratories, of course. Mm-hmm. The best one, there are many of them that are radioactive, and the mother products turn to daughter products. The one that's most used and is most accurate is uranium-238 going to lead-206. And so in a little zircon crystal, for example, mm-hmm. a crystal out of a granite that's, say, a tenth of a millimeter long, zircon, the formula is ZrSiO4, one zirconium to one silica to four oxygens. And the uranium is the same size and charge as the zirconium. And so it can replace a little bit of the zirconium, and thus the uranium is trapped in this little crystal. And then as it decays, the lead, the daughter product, is also trapped in the crystal, unless it's been changed later. You've got to be certain it hasn't been changed.
Mm-hmm.
Then you just measure the amount of uranium to the amount of lead, and you
can tell how long it's been there.
Yeah, you see how old the rock is.
What is the oldest rock up in this area?
Well, the oldest up in northern Minnesota is 2.7. The rocks in the Lake Superior region directly, the North Shore and the South Shore and so on, are 1.1 billion. Pretty young compared to the oldest rocks. The oldest rocks in the world that have been dated are 4.28 billion from Northern Slave Province up in Canada.
Really?
Yep. Yeah. The oldest mineral that's been dated, the oldest zircon grain, was from Western Australia, and that has been dated at 4.4 billion. That's getting close to
the beginning.
The Earth, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, where is the material or the rock that was from before that, then, from the origins?
Yeah, good point. Good question. Well, you know, the Earth has been a very active sphere. Things have been, if you're up on plate tectonics, the ocean floor gets recycled and everything gets remelted and so on. So to find these little places that have escaped all of that mm-hmm. deformation and remelting and so on is rare. And those are usually small areas, and they give us clues to the more distant past. And, of course, the Earth was bombarded about 4 billion years ago by a tremendous number of asteroids, the big bombardment time, they call it. And that caused a lot of reworking, too. And then on the surface of the Earth, we got weathering. The air and water weather the rocks, turn them to soil. So it's really difficult to find remnants of the original, really
anything
old.
Anything that wasn't transformed or hasn't been transformed.
Hasn't been transformed or beaten up, so to speak, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Minnesota now. That's very interesting to hear that perspective of globally. You wrote a couple of books on Minnesota geology. And this may be a silly way to put it, but when does the Minnesota area as we know it appear in geological history?
Well, Minnesota would appear before 3.5 billion, but mm-hmm. We don't know where it was located and so on, but we got rocks that old, so we know Minnesota was existing. You know, what's now Minnesota, there's land that was existing at that time. 3.5 billion, let's say. But since those rocks are gneisses, metamorphic rocks that have been subjected to temperature and pressure changes, there had to have been some earlier rocks, and we don't know how much earlier they would have been. But probably not too early, much earlier than 3.5.
Well, I often at least think of the effects and impacts of glaciation on the geology, and I realize, given these billions of years of history, that glaciation is a relatively recent thing, at least the last one, certainly.
Right, the last glaciation. The glaciers left northern Minnesota 10,000 years ago, roughly. 10,000 is nothing when you compare it to 4.5 billion.
Exactly.
As you just implied.
Yes.
There are older glaciations, but and there might have been one about 2.3 billion years ago, because it glaciated southern Ontario, north of Lake Huron, glaciated Wyoming, glaciated northern Quebec, and Michigan too, northern peninsula of Michigan. Maybe Minnesota was glaciated at that same time, but there's no remnants of those glacial rocks left that we found. I'm always looking for them because I like to study ancient glaciation. In fact, I five times in the last 5 years I've been to India looking at studying old rocks that we've interpreted as glacial deposits.
Were there glacial deposits in India, as far south as India? Of course, I suppose.
Well, of course, that was 2.7 billion years ago.
Oh, okay.
An early glaciation, one of the earliest ever. The oldest glacial rocks reported in the world are 2.9 billion.
Hmm.
And so these at 2.7 are getting up there. And it's kind of fun to study something that old and figure, hey, you're the first one to work on this stuff.
It is all sort of mind-blowing. You mentioned, the rock in Minnesota that's 3.5 billion years old may not have been, and most certainly isn't where it was when it was originally formed because of plate tectonics or whatever the movement of the continents or the rock masses. Tell us a little bit about how plate tectonics have played a role in our region. You know, we haven't always been the North American continent that we know today.
Right. Many people know about Pangaea, which is the last supercontinent. And that supercontinent split up about 200 million years ago, and it's still spreading. That's why the Atlantic is getting bigger. From the mid-Atlantic ridge, it's spreading. So that's the last supercontinent cycle. There may have been four or five or maybe even six supercontinent cycles prior to that. And the further back you go, the harder it is to study them, of course, because much of the evidence is destroyed. Because during plate tectonics, the ocean floor gets, we call it subduction. It goes down the tubes, it remelts and so on. Hmm. And to find remnants of those early rocks are hard to do because of that Earth's recycling.
But, well, if you're just tuning in, folks, you're listening to The Roadhouse on WTIP 90.7 FM, and we are speaking with Dr. Richard O. Jakangas, retired UMD geology professor, who's going to be speaking tomorrow night at North House Folk School at 7:30 p.m., giving a presentation on geology of the North Shore. We're exploring a few of those ideas now. I know, Dr. Ojkanga said, along the North Shore, many people say, okay, that rock is volcanic or lava flow or I don't know.
Right.
Is it the term metamorphic or no?
Just igneous lava flow.
Igneous, yes. What's been the history of volcanic activity on the North Shore, and how recent has it been?
Well, geologically speaking, it's not awfully old. It's only 1.1 billion years old.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you want to put it a different way, 1,100 million years old. And at that time, North America started to split, just like the Mid-Atlantic Ridge is spreading North America and South America from Europe and Africa. The same thing started 1,100 million years ago in the Lake Superior region, that what we call the Mid-Continent Rift. I'll be talking about that tomorrow night, too. It extends from Ohio up through the lower peninsula of Michigan, up into Lake Superior, and then the length of Lake Superior down towards the Twin Cities and all the way to Kansas.
Hmm.
And that started to split 1,100 million years ago, or 1.1 billion. Let's use billion. It's a little simpler. 1.1 billion. But it stopped spreading after about 50 miles. And there are various hypotheses as to why it stopped splitting. But it did stop. Otherwise, Grand Marais might have been a seaside city, you know. And if it had drifted into the correct latitude, it might have had coral reefs out there. You might be sitting on a white sand beach and enjoying it.
Because the continent would have split apart, is that what you're saying? And then the ocean would have flowed in?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, but when it did split, then the lava flowed up. Is that what happened?
Yeah, when the earth splits, it's like, just think of it as a big crack. And it cracks through the crust, and beneath the crust, molten magma rises up. Molten rock or magma rises up onto the surface and spreads out. And it was just like the Columbia Plateau in Washington and Oregon, lava flow after lava flow. John Green in our geology department is the specialist on the North Shore. He has studied those lava flows all the way on the shore, flow by flow, foot by foot, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember how many he's got, hundreds of them.
Yeah, I actually know John Green, and I went for a hike with him on Cascade River just last week.
One of the last great naturalists of the world.
Yeah.
He knows birds, he knows plants, he knows rocks.
Exactly.
He's great.
Those lava flows are interesting to see. Are there some obvious good examples that you can point out to people along the North Shore?
Yeah, there are many good examples. You could go to the state parks. They all have lava flows at the state parks. And by the way, John Green has written a book on the state parks, which if someone is really interested in the geology of these regions, they've got to get a hold of this book if they haven't, called The Geology on Display.
Hmm.
It talks about, or he tells about the geology and scenery, et cetera, of Minnesota's Duluth or Minnesota's North Shore parks, 9 or 10 of them, counting Jay Cook Park at the east end,
mm-hmm.
west end. And
so that would be
a lot more detail than we have time to go into.
Yeah, exactly. Folks could look at that, get that book, and
right.
go to the parks and find the things he's talking about there.
Yeah, you can go all through these, got information from all through the parks, you know. Like Roadside Geology of Minnesota, which I've written, is literally roadside geology, you know. You see what's close to the road.
I was going
to
say, what kind of things can you see right from the road?
Well, by when I say from the road, I mean you can venture off a few hundred feet.
Sure.
And you can see, like any of those, Temperance River State Park or any of those, you can see a lot of the lava flows and all that kind of material.
What about Lake Superior itself? I mean, we hear about the beaches being way up on the hillside now. Lake Superior wasn't always what it is now since the last glaciation. How has it changed since the last glaciation?
Well, as the last glaciers were melting, they melted, let's say they went all the way to Duluth and beyond, you know, and then as they melted back, and Duluth and even Grand Marais were free of ice, but the ice was still up there to the northeast, up towards the Sioux, you know, and up
mm-hmm.
that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that ice lasted longer and was very thick, and it pushed down the crust. And then since the ice has melted now, the crust is rebounding, rising.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we have old beaches at high levels, a couple hundred feet above sea level. Or above lake level.
Yeah.
For example, a beach that is at a certain level in Duluth might be 200 feet higher at Grand Marais than it is at Duluth.
Oh, really?
Because of that uneven rising, and that's what gives Duluth and Superior its good harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And the mouth of the St. Louis River is drowned because what we're doing is picking up the northeast end of the bathtub, you know, Lake Superior, and tipping the water towards the west end.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
One thing.
Why, if it's tipping the water toward the west end, why isn't it flowing out the west end? Maybe it did it flow?
Because of the topography. The water is still flowing into the west end, but the mouth of the St. Louis River is drowned, we say. It's a drowned river mouth,
mm-hmm.
and Duluth Harbor and Superior Harbor have good water behind the sandbars and stuff because of all that water accumulating. But it's not so much that it's going out the west end, although it used to.
Mm-hmm.
When Lake or the predecessor to Lake Superior, let's just say it's Glacial Lake Duluth, was the sea level was hundreds of feet higher than it is now, maybe 400 or 500 feet higher. And at that point, because the glaciers were still blocking the exit to the off the east end
mm-hmm.
to the Sioux and so on. The water was damming up behind that melting glacier, and lake level was very high, and it went out the Brule River in Wisconsin, flowed down to the Mississippi. So the
mm-hmm.
Brule River, which today flows into Lake Superior, at that time, 10,000 years ago roughly, or 9,000 years ago, flowed outward into the rivers that ended up in the Mississippi.
Yeah, that's very interesting. What you study is really, really old, you know, and it must be kind of interesting to think about it that way. But You know, going back to your beginning as a geology professor, has anything new in geology occurred, or are you only looking at things millions and billions of years old?
Well, depends what you mean by something new. When I was a student at UMD in the early 50s, as an undergraduate, I remember Bob Heller, who later became chancellor of UMD, mm-hmm. saying, quote, "The ocean basins and the continents are permanent. They have always been there like they are today." And now we know, of course, that's not true at all, because plate tectonics, which followed continental drift, you know, they first started thinking of continental drift in the early 1900s. And American geologists were very slow to adopt that, and they, come on, that's baloney. And now I think, I think it's very hard to find any geologist anywhere who doesn't accept all of plate tectonics.
That is really interesting that those ideas and those concepts just occurred fairly recently.
Yeah, in the mid-60s is when it really took off because of the ocean floor studies. Part of that was the International Geophysical Year. Back there in the Cold War days, USSR and USA and others were all cooperating on studying of the ocean floor. And that's when they realized that the ocean floor is spreading and getting bigger.
We've talked about broadly about geology here. I know you're going to focus a little more probably on your talk tomorrow, but can you give us a little overview of what people will hear if they come to your talk tomorrow?
Well, we're going to start out talking about the origin of the Mid-Continent Rift System. We call it MRS, Mid-Continent Rift System, which is this big crack, let's say, that opened up all the way from Ohio all the way to Lake Superior and all the way back down to Kansas, and then stopped opening. But we're going to talk a little bit about why it started and how it started and compare it to some modern examples like the East African Rift and so on, and the Mid-Atlantic Rift, which is still spreading. And then we're going to go into the details of the geology on the North Shore and as much as we can. But, you know, it's hard to look at least from my perspective, look at Lake Superior without thinking, hey, it's got a South Shore, too. And the South Shore has some unique things that the North Shore does not have, including copper deposits and old oil deposits and so on. So we'll spend a little time on Michigan and Wisconsin as well. And then we'll end up, because we're all hearing about the prospective mining of copper and nickel up in northern Minnesota.
Sure.
And that out of the north edge of the Duluth-Gabbro complex. Well, the Duluth-Gabbro is the same composition, essentially, as the lava flows of the North Shore, the basalts. It was just magma that didn't get to the surface as lava, but crystallized at depth. And parts of that complex are what contain the ore. So we'll tell you a little bit about that, too. And I know if I didn't say it, there would be questions about it.
Yes, I'm sure there will be. Well, I hope folks hearing this will get a chance to come down and hear you tomorrow night, too. We've been talking to Dr. Richard Ojikangas, a retired UMD geology professor who's going to be giving the presentation tomorrow about some very interesting stuff that affects all of us, where we live and where it came from and where we came from, in a sense. So thank you very much, Dr. Ojikangas, for giving us your time and your expertise here tonight.
I will. Thank you very much. I enjoyed speaking with you there.